bring in Jonah Carey, our friend and yours, Sportsnet CBS, Sports Illustrated, everywhere. Hello, Jonah.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing very well. Did you see the Stroman thing?
They beat him in arbitration.
Yeah, but did you see his tweet?
No, I haven't seen the tweet.
All right, let me read it to you and you react. Here it is, 46 minutes ago.
Okay.
Lost arbitration is what it is. Looking forward to going out and dealing again. The negative things that were said against me by my own team will never leave my mind. I'm thick-skinned, so it will only fuel the fire. Can't wait for this year. The ball's in your court, Jonah. What do you make of that?
What? No hashtag HTMH.
Oh,
no,
yeah. Sorry. I didn't. I didn't include that.
The wall, no hashtag.
That goes without saying. Yeah. That goes without saying.
Yes. Listen, that's how arbitration works.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, don't ask your agent. It's not like they sit in the room. You don't have to ask your agent what was said. They'll literally say, oh, yeah, Marcus Stroman totally can only pitch on days when chicken wings fall from the sky. I mean, like, it's all nonsense. Everybody's just arguing whatever they need to argue. It means nothing. The Blue Jays consider Stroman to be a player in good standing on the roster, and I'm completely with you guys. I am 1,000% pro-labor. Owners are terrible. Burn it all down. Fight the power and all that stuff. But come on, buddy. This is how life works. I mean, he obviously is not that thick-skinned. This is literally how it's been done time immemorial. Go back and read articles about arbitration in 1978, and you'll have, I don't know, Catfish Hunter being like, this is so terrible. Why are they bad-mouthing me? This is how it's always been. This is how it always will be.
Yeah, I'd like to see the one person that tries to make the case other than Marcus Stroman that he is thick-skinned. That's not really the way I would describe it.
I like Marcus, by the way. He's one of my favorite players in all of baseball, and maybe he's just doing this, you know, because this is what his fans expect, and maybe he doesn't really believe it, and maybe, you know, he understands the arbitration process, but he's, you know, putting on a show. Whatever it is, it's all fine, ultimately. You know, I'm sure he'll go out, he'll pitch well. He's a very good pitcher, but, you know, this stuff doesn't matter.
Yeah, there's a number of different reasons. Hey, and maybe I'd feel differently if I had to actually go through the process, but just understanding what I do about it through people who have been through it and people who report on it. It's strictly a numbers game. And some of the numbers are stupid numbers that smart baseball people don't even pay attention to anymore. I'm not even sure, Jonah, but I think like pitcher wins are a part of that equation. That's stupid. Of course, we shouldn't judge a player's salary based on that. I know RBIs are definitely a part of it for position players. I'm trying to see the Marcus Stroman side of things other than, okay, I don't want anybody to say anything negative about me, but it's like we're literally talking about numbers here.
Well, you bring up a great point about the old numbers. Arbitration is like the last vestige of old school bubblegum card thinking, where that is how it works. It's triple crown stats and wins and saves, and oh, so-and-so had 13 wins, you had 11, here's what we're going to do. And it's because the arbitrators are not, they don't work for Fangraphs, you know, Sean Dawson, guys like the people who followed him. That's how it's always been done. There's been a precedent set. That could be an interesting conversation for the next CBA. I feel like the next CBA, which is so far off, it's still like 4 years away. But you got to change a lot of things. The arbitration system should change. And frankly, you know, whether or not guys should go to free agency after 6 years or fewer should change, because I'm sure we'll get into this as a bigger issue. But here we are sitting here and all these guys are unsigned. And everybody's realizing it's not a good idea to sign free agents because those guys are free agents when they're 29, 30 years old, which is after a baseball player peaks. So what is the motivation to throw a lot of money at these guys? You know, if I'm the union, I'm saying, forget arbitration, free agency after 3 years, and the owners will say, okay, yeah, you could try it, buddy. You have no chance of doing that. But I feel like there's almost no way that there's not going to be some kind of serious conflict, and I'm going to be interested to see if something happens before 4 years from now, because we're kind of going nowhere right now.
Yeah, we're going nowhere, and there's still, like, some massive, massive name free agents out there. Are you going to go check out that bizarro, like, Island of Misfit Toys, the guys having their own spring training?
So MLB Trade Rumors did a piece on this. Tim Dirksen, one of his guys down there, and they were not allowed.
It was really?
Like if you were trying to crash Nick Saban's Alabama. Well, actually, it would be the opposite, because there you'd be encouraged to do so. No, it's lock and key. It's under, it's like in Walt Disney World, I believe, and the big complex over there. And nobody's allowed, not media, not agents, not anybody. You cannot get in there. Not even somebody with the fine fettle that you guys have would be able to pull it off. No.
Yeah. I would think there'd just be so many good stories there that a lot of writers would be trying to get in. By the way, just a quick thing. According to Rocco Batko? How do you say this name? Kabutko? No, I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Can't read. Do you know this guy, Masson Rock? He writes for the Orioles. I just don't know his last name. I'm guessing Jonah doesn't know him either.
Yeah, Rockabacco. Yeah, Kabako, he has the biggest biceps in all of sports writing.
Really? Okay, well, good for him. He says that the Orioles are signing Andrew Cashner to a two-year deal worth $16 million guaranteed. So no Cashner for the Blue Jays. I guess the search will continue. Not really sure exactly who they're targeting at this point. He was the one name that the Blue Jays were linked to, but not going to be him. He's going to be headed to the Orioles.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like 216 is something that Jay's going to come up with, but he's not the only guy like that. There are other kind of back of the rotation types with some proven track record who could be out there. Vargas is still out there, whatever. So we'll see. I mean, Cashner is a fine signing at that price, and it feels like the Jays are a little lighter than the number five starter. But again, we've talked about it before. I do like what they did with the middle infield, at least going out and getting a guy like Solarte. They've addressed what actually, and Aledmus, they've gone out and said, okay, our biggest problem is what are we going to do about our middle infield? And they've done something about the middle infield, so that's at least a good sign. But yeah, they're still a little light, and there's still some roster shaping to be done before all said and done.
Yeah, it's a good thing they went out and got those middle infielders, because we know there's definitely some injury concerns with Troy Tulowitzki and Devin Travis. Now, we haven't seen any report on Devin Travis, although I saw a gif of him running today, so that's good.
Very encouraging.
That's good. He's running, but the early reports on a guy you know well, Troy Tulowitzki, I mean, they're saying the right things. I feel for Troy, right? Like, that's... It's easy to make fun of the guy, and he's made enough money in his career that you don't have to feel sorry for him or anything. But yeah, you wonder where his career could have gone if he remained at his peak health. But yeah, I don't know if you saw the report yesterday, Jonah, that he has bone spurs in his heel now that he's dealing with after the injury he suffered last year. Yeah. What are the expectations for you for Troy Tulowitzki in 2018?
Yeah, first of all, I know Tulowitzki slightly better than I would know other players for various and sundry reasons, and the guy's a total gym rat. Like, he's not clubbing. He just trains and works hard at his craft and gets hurt. I mean, it's not for lack of effort. It's not for lack of anything. He's just his body has been betraying him. There's not much to be done. So, yeah, I mean, of course, you know, if you're making $25,000 a year and this guy's making $25 million a year, it's hard to feel too much sympathy, but truly he wants to play baseball. It's not anything like that. It's just that's how it goes sometimes in sports. You know, having said that, I think he could still offer value to the team, obviously, if he's able to get healthy and be on the field. You know, even if his defense is diminished from his peak level, Jose Reyes was a shortstop for the Blue Jays not that long ago. It's still a far sight better than that. If he's hitting .260 with some walks and some power and playing defense and giving 125 games, that's good. That's a real asset that you can have. So I think that's what the Jays are banking on by having Diaz, by having other options, is just being able to give Tulowitzki some days off and keep him fresh, because he's still an asset. You know, even in his 30s, he can still be a good player. Is he a $20-odd million a year player at this point if you were just re-upping and trying again? No, I think that ship has sailed. But that doesn't mean that he doesn't have value. Once you lower your expectations, he could still be a quality contributor.
We want to ask you some basketball questions in a second, Jonah, but I want to stick on the Blue Jays for at least one more question. That, I think we're all pretty honest about what the Blue Jays are at this point. I mean, I suppose tomorrow they could go out and sign Mike Moustakas and Eric Hosmer, and yeah, it's a different conversation. But yes, they're a team that's projected to be in and around an 81-win team, and that's about right. Do you think the front office has built this team in good faith when they talk about competing in 2018, that indeed was the objective? Or do you think that there's not something untoward happening here, but an understanding that, okay, yeah, if everything does go according to plan and Randall Grichuk has his Mark Trumbo 47 home run year, that, okay, there is a path to being a wild card team in 2018, but more than likely we're going to be below 500 at the non-waiver trade deadline. We're going to recoup some assets for Josh Donaldson, and then we'll look at the next wave being headed by Vlad Jr. and Bo Bichette. Do you think the front office is probably thinking that?
Well, let me try to answer it by just looking at the landscape for a second. Mm-hmm. There have got to be 10, 12 teams that just don't care this year. They're not trying, tanking completely. Let me get some high draft picks. Let me slash my payroll. This whole cold stove season gives me an excuse and all that. The Jays are not doing that. The question is, what do we want? Fans, media, what do you want? And I think things have changed. Now it's become very acceptable to tank, because the Cubs and the Astros wrote tanking to glory. And this idea of we think we can win 82 games is, you know, not as embraced as it used to be. Yeah, the Jays are trying, but to what end? You know, that the 99th percentile outcome is that they win a wild card, but more likely than not, they're kind of an okay team that's not going to go anywhere. People are sort of more frustrated about that than they used to be, because, you know, fans are smarter, media smarter, and they realize that drafting 15th and kind of having an old team and not trading away guys for prospects is not the way to sustain success in the future. So that's sort of where we're at. So it kind of depends on your point of view. The Jays are trying. I mean, they went out, they got Granderson, Solarte, Grichik, Diaz. You know, they made efforts here. The pitching staff has remained pretty much the same, but it's a good top four. You know, if Sanchez is healthy, that is a very good starting rotation, one of the best in the league. So I sort of get your question, but it's kind of like they're stuck. So, you know, in answer to you, to what you've said, yeah, you know, they're going to give it a go. And if it doesn't work, I'm sure they'll make trades. And if they're truly out of the race, yeah, JD's gone. They'll get what they can for him, and they'll kind of go from there. Not that JD. And they'll figure it out. But,
JD,
you know,
will be here.
They're sort of in this. They're one of the very few teams in this kind of limbo. There can't be more than two or three other teams in all of baseball that are trying this kind of have it both ways things. It feels like the Jays are the poster child for the old way, which is to try to compete but not have as good a team versus just tearing everything down.
Are you a little surprised, though, that no one's kind of stepped up and revamped their budget or tinkered with things to try to take advantage of this? Because we saw the Brewers try to jump in the mix a little bit, but it doesn't seem like anybody else has.
Well, I think the Twins have. You know, they didn't get Darvish, but by all accounts, they were offering like $100 million in the Twins. You know, yeah, they have. To me, I don't look at teams and see this small market, big market as much as other people do, because literally MLB Advanced Media is going to issue checks for $50 million to each team in baseball on top of new stadiums, on top of TV deals, on top of everything. So I think the poor mouthing is garbage. Everybody's making money. So, you know, the Twins are obviously capable. The Phillies spent the money, right? They went out and they got Santana. They got two quality relief pitchers. So we've seen it here and there. It just hasn't been as prevalent as you'd expect. But this doesn't stop the Brewers, by the way, from, okay, the Cubs got Darvish. We're going to take your guy. We're going to go and get Arrieta. I could see that being a destination for him. You know, or Cobb goes there, or somebody makes a trade for Archer. So, yeah, I think that these teams you wouldn't necessarily associate with big spending could step up because they're good. The Twins were good last year. Brewers were good last year. They're incentivized to try to push in, you know, all in to some extent because their window is now and they could end up being really excellent. So, yeah, I think that there is potential there. And the offseason's not over, right? Maybe Arizona does re-sign J.D. Martinez. Maybe Arrieta does go to the Brewers. Maybe Cobb does end up a Twin. I think you could see stuff like that happen because by all accounts, the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Giants and teams you would expect to spend don't seem particularly motivated to spend right now.
Have you been to any ball games since you left here?
Ball games. I've been to a Nuggets game recently, and I've been to an Avs game recently.
Okay.
And I went to a, I saw a game in New Orleans as well, the Pelicans, which was super fun.
So I actually want to ask you a quick Nuggets question because you are in Denver, and Jamal Murray is starting to get into the public conscious or the public sporting conscious here in Canada. We've been actually the last couple of days we've been talking to different people and whether or not he's actually taken the belt from Andrew Wiggins as the best Canadian basketball player. And I was wondering if you took Denver Broncos out of the equation, where he would rank right now in sort of the Denver sports pantheon of players people are interested in.
Yeah, the Nuggets are weird. It's a weird situation. They haven't quite been embraced. You know, the Raptors have really come on in the last few years, and Toronto has just been hungry to accept any winning team, and obviously the Leafs are going to be kings, but you know, we saw the reaction to the Jays sellouts and monster crowds or whatever, and the Raptors have some big time support too. The Nuggets haven't had the same level of success on the court. So even though they've got good players, people don't walk around with Jamal Murray jerseys the way that they should. And furthermore, he's, I don't know, the third or fourth best player on that team. That's a pretty good team. Jokic is really good. I really like Gary Harris. He's an excellent player. You know, Millsap, when he's healthy, is a proven veteran. So, yeah, Murray's numbers are fantastic. If you own him in fantasy, mazel tov. But he hasn't quite broken through in that household name thing. And I think the way that would have to happen is more team success. And even though you've got this just toolsy 20-year-old who's really putting up numbers and doing great things, the Nuggets need to break through, and the West has just remained so loaded that how are the Nuggets, what's their roadmap to 53 or 54 or 55 wins? It's that Murray needs to be an unadulterated superstar. Harris needs to come through. Jokic needs to come through. They need to get lucky on multiple fronts, and OKC and several other teams need to fall off too. So it's just a tough thing. by all accounts, he should be there. If he was a Raptor right now and he's playing with DeMar and Lowry, wow, would he be absolutely embraced. But that hasn't quite been there to the same extent in Denver, unfortunately. I see you. I see you, Jamal. I see you guys recognizing Jamal, but we haven't seen that recognition yet.
Is, okay, living in Denver, when you leave it and you come to sea level, can you just run forever? Are you like a superhero when you leave that climate?
I was going
to
go with another basketball question, but yeah.
No, I'm intrigued by that.
I'm a middle-aged man, so the answer to your question is no.
Oh.
Well,
go ahead with your basketball question.
There are other middle-aged, like we know Michael Grange, big runner, middle-aged guy, still got.
Does he run marathons?
No, but Kiprios ran a marathon? Did that?
Oh yeah, right.
Kiprios was fairly recently. So
I'm also more anaerobic than aerobic. Yeah. I played basketball my whole life, so my knees are pretty crummy.
That's actually something that I'm trying to come to grips with right now. Like I'm 31, and I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do in terms of athletics moving forward, because I don't think I can keep playing basketball because I'm terrified of tearing something in my legs, and so it's just like, all right, what am I? Yeah. I hate golf.
Yeah,
like,
you have too short a fuse for golf.
Yeah, it's tough. That's why I think for me the rose would be a little bit of maybe jujitsu. I think that's I'm serious.
You're talking about protecting yourself from injury.
No, but that's no. Well, I'm not trying to enter tournaments and try to be the Karate Kid here. I just want to do something that's gives you a good sweat. You can be a little competitive, but you also you learn something new every day. So on this Raptors team heading into the All-Star break, I guess there's a whole bunch of discussion right now south of the border about it, whether this is for real, because now people actually have to talk about them. They're going to have two All-Stars. They sit at the top of the Eastern Conference. They're now, I wouldn't say firmly secure ahead of the Celtics, but there seems to be a little bit of a gap between the two teams at this point. And it looks like the Eastern Conference might be more about the Cavaliers and the Raptors. At this point, when we're hitting the All-Star break, are you cautiously optimistic, or do you find yourself actually buying in that this is for real?
Well, there's a couple of different things going on. You have a 7-game winning streak, and they've got two All-Stars, but we need to acknowledge that Valanciunas is a significantly better player this year. He's just a different guy. And again, he's a legacy player. You know, if this was 1995, we'd be more excited about it because he's a post-up player and he'll get you 10 and 10 and whatnot. But, you know, he's more efficient. He's doing good things. And there's been some player development, right? Norm has kind of stalled a little bit, but Van Vliet's come up big repeatedly. Pirtle shows flashes. I mean, these guys are good players. They have role guys. It's not like you look at this and say, well, this is a two-man team, or three if you want to include Ibaka. This team has some depth, not by spending, but by going out and trusting their guys. You know, they got rid of Corey Joseph, and that worked out fine. You know, they've got, if anything, they've got three capable point guards on the roster right now when you talk about both Wright and Van Vliet. They've got multiple big men when you talk about Pirtle being capable and Siakam having his moments and whatnot. So this is a pretty good team. Now, could they use another sniper? Yeah. You know, when I was on with Blair a few weeks ago, I brought up Lou Williams, and then everybody in the room, including Travis behind the glass, said, you're crazy. We already did the Lou Williams thing, and that's it. Yeah, but couldn't you really use someone who could drop 27 on any night when you go into the playoffs? But even though this team has depth, couldn't you really use just one more sniper? Yeah, or Tyreek or whatever. And for various reasons, whether it's cap or not wanting to trade a Pirtle or Van Vliet or whatever, they haven't gone in that direction. That's the only thing that I wonder about. It's just, you know, if teams really focus on Lowry and DeRozan, even in the ball movement era where the team doesn't play ISO all the time, are you sure those other guys are knocking down shots? Are you sure? Because I really wish there was one more guy. That's the only thing I'd say about the Raptors. Really good team. I love the player development. One more guy would make me really happy.
That's 100%.
Kind of why I wish they would take a little bit longer look at Norm Powell right now. Is I like OG Anunoby, and I think he's got a really high ceiling, but he hasn't done enough lately for my money to just continue to say there's no reason that their Raptors aren't changing it. I know that when things are working and you're the first team in the Eastern Conference, you don't want to mess with success. But here you have a guy that has a history of being able to come off the bench and provide you with that type of offense and spurts that has been struggling a lot lately, but probably has a higher ceiling as a player than the guy that you currently have, at least this season. And yet there still hasn't been really a focus in trying to find this guy minutes, when really, if I look up and down the roster, I'd say, okay, after DeMar and Kyle, to consistently get you baskets, I would think that he would be the next guy.
Yeah, I think that's true, although I would argue that in crunch time, that might be Van Vliet at this point. You know, that it's weird because he's another point guard on the court, basically, but, you know, he's hoisting threes and he's hitting them, and okay, you could be 6 foot, whatever, that's Gary Harris is not that much bigger than that. He plays a big role for the Nuggets, going back to that. So maybe that's where we're at. I do think that it makes sense to play Norm Moore. I mean, they gave him a 4-year contract extension for a reason. If they obviously believe in him, then you don't want to see Casey kind of bury a guy that that management believes in. But I think your crunch time lineup is Lowry, DeRozan, Ibaka, Van Vliet. And maybe Miles, too. I think you go ultra small and you try it that way because you need shooters, and the shooters on this team, CJ's not a big guy either, they happen to be small. Now, you could get just crushed defensively that way. But, you know, DeMar's stretchy and Ibaka can do a lot of things. He can play a five if he needs to. I could see situations like that where it's in the playoffs and they're just going to flood the court with offense that way. We'll see what happens, but that might be the solution, honestly.
Yeah, it'd be tough to ever get a rebound with that lineup, but yeah. Could be interesting. Also,
yeah.
$10 million is a lot to pay a victory cigar in Norm Powell. So yeah, you got to figure they're working on a way to get him back into the rotation. Jonah, really appreciate you taking the time for us. Thanks for this, pal.
See you, buddy.
Thanks, fellas.